Mike had charisma. He was the type of person that just could make you believe everything.
And the centerpiece of the entire web is the use of children for sex.
It was a stunning case that ultimately revealed the secretly perverse lifestyle Wesson had forced his family to lead.
It was more like an organized crime family.
According to Yahweh's law, that was just the way it was supposed to be.
One verse that said, if you don't like him, kill him. I really wish I could find it.
Welcome back to another episode of Seven Deadly Sinners, part two of my interview with Nicole Maffey, daughter of Prophet Paul Kingston, the leader of the Kingston clan, also known as the Order. Nicole escaped this abusive group and built her own life and family on her terms. This is her story. But before we get to that, by the way, I have to apologize for my hoarse voice in part one of this and now part two. My allergies were and are kicking. And also, for whatever reason, my end of the phone call came in less clear. I'm not sure if it was because, I don't think it was because of my hoarse voice. I think it was just, I don't know, a service issue. But I did my best to cut out me speaking unnecessarily and just let Nicole tell her story, which is powerful and important. And let's be honest, no one really needs my interjections anyways. But after this, I hope you read her book, The Leader's Daughter, because it's so well written and in-depth, and you'll get the full scope of her life within the abusive Kingston clan. I read the entire thing, and I was completely blown away. And I hope she writes a part two or like a sequel. You can get her book on Amazon, and I believe, is it called Google Books or Google Reads? Whatever. If you just Google it, The Leader's Daughter, Nicole Maffey, it will come up. I bought it on Amazon, so there you go. So if you'll remember at the end of part one of our conversation last week, Nicole revealed to me that the leader's daughters, so Paul's brothers, you know, John Daniel Kingston, all those ones that we heard about when I covered the Kingston clan, that these daughters, I didn't realize, are bought and sold within the group. This completely floored me. So we'll pick up with that part of the conversation, and we're going to hear so much more about her escape and trigger warning about the abuse of actual babies, all children, sexual abuse. It's going to get pretty dark, so please take care when listening. But it's also hopeful because Nicole is living and thriving, even with her setbacks, which you'll hear about. Who among us doesn't have a setback, especially in the pandemic? So without further ado, here is the lovely and brave Nicole Maffey.
Girls are definitely, so you have the Kingston brothers, and they definitely, it happens a lot more in that inner circle. You have people on the outside that it doesn't really happen as much, but like my dad and his brothers, I don't know how much you know about the Kingstons, the actual people that are like in the inner circle. When you're talking about those guys, then there's definitely, so they'll buy and sell daughters back and forth. So girls are pretty much assets of people that the guys use in the order to buy standing. They'll get businesses handed to them. It's just, a woman is pretty much traded, or actually she's not a woman yet. A child is pretty much traded for a business, for higher standing, all that stuff.
Okay, I didn't know that. That's not reported anywhere in the media. So it's actually like they, it's essentially sex trafficking of their own. There's a monetary compensation or a power compensation for it.
Yeah. So, and it depends. So for example, one of the guys that, I was having a conversation with one of the boys that had recently left, and they said they didn't believe that women were bought and sold. They didn't believe that the daughters were bought and sold. And he said, my dad got like this business handed to him and the order took care of him and all this stuff. And I asked him, I was actually with one of my cousins that had left as well. And we said, well, how many of your sisters got married last year? And he was like, well, four or five. And we said, well, who did they marry? And she says, well, a bunch of Paul's boys and Daniel's boys. And we said, exactly. Those girls were sold to them for this business. And he was like, no, I don't believe that. And then things went down that this business was really sketchy. And the guy that had sold his daughters was actually on all the paperwork and everything. So he was actually the one that got fined and got in trouble for everything. And so you're making a deal with the devil. So yeah, they'll screw you over however you can. And it's just, yeah.
What do you think the motive is? Like, okay. So for Paul and John Daniel, and I don't even care really learn all their names. They all sound the same to me. I mean, I know them, but I just.
Yeah, they're all the same.
Yeah. What is their, like, motive to have, I know they didn't start this. I know it was started by, like, their father, grandfather, whatever, but the motive can't totally be religious, obvious. I mean,
I don't think that any of it is really religious. I think they're using that as a cover to manipulate people and to screw people over. I think it could have potentially started as religious. I do think that it started religious. I do think that there was, I think there was a religious motivation in the very beginning. Honestly, a lot of it. So the order started in the Great Depression, and it was a bunch of people that came together really to help each other get through the Great Depression. Mm-hmm. And it was really I think that beginning motivation is really why the order has been so successful financially, is because that was why it started in the first place, is to help all these people to make it during the Great Depression. And then I think that they did have the religious aspect of it, and I think that it was more a part of it. But at this point, even when you go to church, it's really not, they're not teaching the Bible. They're not teaching even the Book of Mormon and Joseph Smith at this point. They do have that included, but it's generally about order history or about business and making the order money. Mm-hmm. It's not even about religion or God or anything at this point. It's really just about them controlling people and building what they are trying to build. And it's more financial motivation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I remember researching that it started as a good thing, like a co-op of sorts. And it was supposed to be, and then probably just the way like people's minds work and it's like, or bad people's minds work. It's just like, oh, well, I can get power out of this. Cool.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, okay. So what fascinates me, and not in a good way, but is that these men marry a ton of women within the order, and the women live in poverty, and then you guys as kids live in poverty, which is, just, it breaks my heart. Okay. It doesn't fascinate me. It makes me mad, frankly. But, like, I read in your book that, yes, your dad owned the house maybe that your mom lived in or some of his wives lived in, but then they paid rent back to him. I am in no way, like, saying, like, there's anything wrong with your mom or any of these women. Like, I feel bad for them, and I think people can be brainwashed. But, like, that's a rough situation. Like, I don't see the benefit.
So it is, it's hard for, okay. So to liken it to a domestic violence situation, right? A woman that takes so much and doesn't leave, and everybody looks at her like, why didn't you leave? And she's like, honestly, I don't know. And what they do, so first of all, yes, they do, the guys do own the houses and the women do pay rent. And then the women also pay the utilities. And if they can't pay the utilities, then their utilities get shut off. There were times that we went without heat.
So it is a domestic violence situation. Let me just say something real quick just so my listeners don't think I'm a dick. I totally see that the woman is suppressed and it is in a, and I don't think I'm immune to getting in that situation. Sorry, I feel like a jerk saying, like, I don't understand how it happens. It is very much, it's brainwashing. So
It is, yeah. Even, and to this day, I mean, and I'm going to be honest, and I might sound like a dick as well, I don't have a ton of sympathy for my mom. I think that there's brainwashing up to an extent, and then at some point you start making that choice. And I think that I would be understanding to any woman making that choice. When I lose my understanding is when the kids are affected. And I watched my mom become a victim and then become the abuser. And so I honestly don't have a lot of sympathy at this point. I do feel for her. I do understand that she went through, like, she was married at 16. She was a baby when she was married. She was a child. Mm-hmm. And she had nobody in her corner. She didn't really have a lot of family she didn't have any family that she could reach out to. She had no support system. And I do feel for her. I remember being 16. But at some point, she became an adult, and it was no longer my dad beating the kids, and it became her. So that's the point that I say, okay, this is now your choice. And even outside of the order, if you're in a toxic situation for that long, you become toxic. You don't stay good if you're in a situation like that for that long. You get really low, you get depressed, you have all these things happen, and you start putting up with things that are not okay. You still love your kids, but you still allow them to be in situations that you should never allow as a parent.
Yeah.
And so yeah, I do see. So another thing to think about too is a lot of these women are born into this culture. They don't know anything different. They don't know, like, when I married my husband, I didn't know that he was supposed to help with the kids. I didn't know he was supposed to help around the house. I didn't even know he was supposed to help me pay bills. He slept in my bed. He went to work, and my husband did always pay bills, and he did always do that, but I never expected it of him. And wow. He did help with the kids, but I never expected it of him. And I honestly didn't appreciate it enough. In fact, and that this was one of the things that messed up my marriage, is that I did not expect him to be a partner, and I never treated him like one. I didn't, like, he wasn't somebody that, like, I worked with. I took care of the kids, and, like, I took on everything by myself, and he would come and say, what can I do to help? And I didn't know what to tell him. And so it's just kind of the way that they're raised.
I have, so, sorry to interrupt you. That's really interesting to hear. So that seems like it's twofold, though, where you could end. It seems like your husband seems like a nice guy, and he didn't take advantage of it. But it seems like you could have ended up in a situation where someone would completely take advantage of you. You'd just be like, "But this is how I was raised. This is normal."
Absolutely.
And then now you're with someone, and he's doing, you know, I guess proper societal things, and maybe he feels like, well, why didn't she appreciate, like, I don't know, like, it's just a weird dynamic that, unfortunately, you were raised in that, like, you know, informs how you treat things.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So, and that was another thing. I've always told, even whatever happens with my husband and I going forward, I've always told him, I will always deeply appreciate what you were for me. Because you could have taken advantage, and you could have just lived off of me while I worked and took care of the kids and cleaned the house and did absolutely everything. And you could have just sat on your ass the whole time. And so forever, I will always appreciate that he has never been that kind of person. And yeah.
Well, you also seem super tough, in my opinion, but that doesn't, I guess that doesn't change anything. But do you feel like you could have married someone and just defaulted to what your mom or your mom's sister was? Is that the right?
Yeah, in fact,
what they did?
Absolutely. Yeah. When I first got married, I definitely was, in fact, my husband is really the person, one of the things I fell in love with him for is because he was the first guy that allowed me to say no. When I didn't want to, so when I was out drinking, when I was partying, when I was hanging out with other guys, no guys ever respected when I said no. I'm not saying every guy raped me, but they did more than, like, I have to start crying and freak them out before they would stop.
Yeah.
Whereas with my husband when like we started hanging out and we started like having any kind of relationship and the friendship, I said no and he stopped immediately. And honestly, when he did that, then I actually felt rejected when he stopped. Because I was like, well, he obviously doesn't love me because, like, why would he stop? Like, does he not want me? Does he not care about me? Like, does he, like, and then we started hanging out more. And, like, and I even told him that. I was like, well, do you not like me? And he was like, I am so confused right now. Like, what are you talking about? Because I didn't understand what love and respect looked like. And so that's honestly one of the things that I fell in love with about him is he was the first person that ever taught me to respect myself.
Oh, that's sweet. Even if it doesn't work out with you guys, that's pretty sweet.
It is. And that's why, like, as much of a jerk as he can be, like, because he's not perfect. I'm not trying to say that he's perfect, but he really was exactly what I needed when I left. And he really did teach me how to respect myself, how to respect others, how to communicate in a relationship. And he really is amazing. Like, even if we don't work out, whatever, like, he still is an amazing human that I will always have a lot of respect for.
Yeah. I also just realized how pathetic I was right there, where I was like, he's sweet just because he's not bad and rapey. But that doesn't mean that I was just like, what an angel. Anyways, okay.
That's what I realized. Like, women do that. They're like, oh, he respected you. And we should all be saying, this is the norm. Like, what? Yeah.
I was so sad. I was just like, it took me a second. It came out of my mouth, and then as you were talking, I was like, well, that shouldn't be the marker of a wonderful person.
Oh, I feel you, girl.
Anyway, so you didn't know he was your father until you were 6 or 8.
Yeah.
And then just explain the trajectory from that point, and you don't have to discuss your abuse. I think we've obviously alluded to it. If you want to, I'm completely open, and I'll give you a safe space to do it. But just in your words, and I won't interrupt you anymore, explain the trajectory of your childhood from there.
So after I found out he was my dad, her parents were not like the inner circle. And so she actually had her own family that was kind of outside of my dad's family. And so after my grandma died and she didn't really have that support anymore, she did start leaning more towards my dad's family. And that's when he started dictating, like, where we went to school, what we started doing. That's where I started going to babysitters and was often abused and neglected in every way. And she would just, I mean, she was working full time. She was working all the time. And it was, and we really just went to different, to whatever babysitter could take us. And a lot of the babysitters were really young kids that had also been abused. And so you can imagine that abuse just continued to perpetuate. And for so many reasons, I mean, yeah. So you have 14 and 16 year olds that were never allowed to grow up or be an adult, who were going through pregnancy hormones, who were going through, I mean, most girls are raped on their wedding night. That's a very normal thing. And so they're dealing with rape trauma, and they're dealing with having a baby from that rape trauma. And then they're given a daycare of 12 to 20 kids to watch. And they have their own anger. They have their own issues that they're taking out on those kids and whatever form of abuse they're using. I remember I was beaten with, in fact, I actually went in after I was an adult, and I went in and they thought I had a brain tumor. And so I did lots of testing on it, and they found out it's just a patch of fluid that comes from blunt force trauma. So from that abuse, I still have like a huge patch of fluid in my brain that has not healed properly.
I'm so sorry, that breaks my heart.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's not like, and I have half siblings that have died. In fact, I've had a couple of siblings that were run over by vans, mostly about 2 years old. I think so last year, there was a toddler that I actually had a sister who was 18 months old, and she was beaten to death by a phone.
A two-year-old.
She was 18 months old.
Did anyone get prosecuted? Who did this?
The babysitter went to jail for, I think, 3 to 6 months and did end up losing her own kids for about a year. She did work to get them back. That it was actually her.
That's not enough time.
No. Oh, no, it should be life.
Certainly that's not enough time, but perhaps she could get better through maybe, I don't know, 20 years of therapy. Oh, my God.
So they actually said that it was her husband. So in my group, rumor went around that it was actually her husband that did it. And he has, in fact, I have an aunt that was married to him that actually ended up leaving him because he was physically abusive. So it sounds like the wife actually took the fall for him and went to prison for him. Oh. So, well, yeah, and that
was equally
depressing. Yeah. So, I mean, lots of kids are abused, deaths happen. Their death rate is pretty high. And actually it was just last year that a 1 year old, was beaten to death. And I think both of, so her mom and the sister wife and the husband, I think are all in jail for that now.
How are they not getting shut down? Like, how is no one raiding them like they raided Warren Jeff's compound? Like,
it's hard to know who all is a part of it.
It's too horrific.
Yeah. So it's hard to know who all is a part of it because, I mean, the order has their own statements and everything. Warren Jeff's actually kept really good records and of all of his abuse and everything, whereas the order doesn't keep that good of that accurate of records about it. And so even if they were, so they did end up raiding for their financials, but as far as the child abuse, then I mean, yeah, in fact I talked to, so a lot of it is the DCFS, the local Utah cops, and everybody are in cahoots with them, so that makes it hard. In fact, when I was working with Holding Out Health, we would try to get kids out of the different groups, and DCFS would just send them back home. In fact, we would actually have to hide the kids from DCFS, the cops, and everybody involved. And luckily, there were cops that actually had consciences, or that actually had a conscience, and would be like, "Okay, here's what you got to do to get out of this, to keep this kid safe." And we had to. It was tough. Like,
well,
you didn't have anybody on your side.
It's horrible.
The only way that we could find to protect some of these kids is actually to send them out to Nevada and have safe homes out in Nevada, because Nevada doesn't have runaway laws after they're 15. And so it helped with the kids that were younger that we were trying to help out. But yeah, Utah, you couldn't keep them in Utah because cops and DCFS and everybody were working with them and they were paying them off. And so they would just send them back home.
Okay. So you think, because I was going to ask you, like, what was their incentive to help cover it up, a payoff, or do you think that they were also involved in abusing the kids? Was there any trafficking with authorities? I mean, we could just say allegedly, and I can cut this out, I'm just asking.
So I think that it was all monetary gain. I don't think that they were actually helping with the abuse, because a lot of the abuse it's not really planned. Like, it's not like they're like, okay, we're going to abuse this kid and this kid and this kid. The kids being sold to husbands are planned. But as far as, like, you have a kid, like, my little sister, my 18-month sister that died, I don't think that was planned. I think he came home, he flew into a rage, and he beat the crap out of her.
What makes these guys so mad? Like, what?
Oh, they have the worst tempers.
Huh? Say that again?
They have the worst tempers. In fact, Daniel has been, I mean, you know, Daniel has been to prison for beating his daughter almost to death. That's not the only daughter. Yeah, that was the only daughter that actually pressed charges. He's beaten every single one of them that I know personally, and I grew up with his kids.
I just wonder if it's like a genetic thing or if it's just like the power then got to them and then they just feel like, I can do whatever the hell I want. It escalates.
I've heard a lot of it is their mom. Their mom taught them that they can do whatever they want and there's no consequences. She tries to run the order.
You know what's funny too, then we'll all get back on track, is the, I mean, there's like, what's like, 5,000 of the same bloodline. And I know that looks shouldn't matter, whatever, but it just makes me happy because the guys are so mean to the women that, like, the men are unattractive at best. There's not one, but all the girls are very pretty. I was saying to you, like, And the two girls that were on Escaping Polygamy, and then there's a bunch of, like, I mean, I feel like everything God did, it was like, let's give these girls the looks. Piece of shit, because, like, you guys are all so pretty, and the guys really look like they just met for a week straight.
I have noticed that too. So in my generation, there wasn't a lot of intermarrying, but there is a lot more of that now. And so I think a lot of the kids actually have genetic issues now. There's higher rates of cancer, higher rates of Down syndrome. Like, I have science to back me up here. But that's
so irresponsible and sad. Like, why would you do that?
I agree. My sister actually married her second cousin, and her first baby actually died from a genetic disease, and he spent his first 6 weeks in the hospital and then passed away. So,
poor baby.
Yeah, it was awful, and she was 15 when she had him too. She was 16 when she had him, I think, but.
We all know that fall gets super busy. It's like back to school time and the holidays are fast approaching. And we don't want to have to think about a beautiful meal to put on the table. I mean, we want the beautiful meal, but we don't want to have to think about it. And that's why HelloFresh is your savior. HelloFresh has been my savior for, 4 years now. I've been a HelloFresh devotee. I'm obsessed with them. I love to cook, but do you know what I love more? Getting my family involved in cooking. And my fiance, who is someone who has been like, way before HelloFresh, been like, I get too stressed out in the kitchen, will gladly and proudly make a HelloFresh meal and act like he's like, what's that guy's name? Gordon Ramsay or something. He is so, he'll be like, do you see what I made? This is delicious. I'm like, I know, it's so delicious. But there were pictures and pre-measured ingredients that made it easier. I don't say that to him. But that's how easy HelloFresh is. HelloFresh offers convenient, contact-free delivery right to your doorstep for easy home cooking with the family. And they make it fun. The recipes are easy to follow and quick to make with steps and pictures, like I said, to guide you along the way. And the great part, too, is that HelloFresh offers the flexibility you need with customizable orders every week. You can add extra proteins and sides, which I have definitely done. I love that I can just straight up order protein from HelloFresh. You can change up the serving size when you have guests or double up on your favorite recipes so your box works harder for you. Everything about it is truly amazing. It brings the family together. It puts healthy, fresh meals on your table. So try HelloFresh for yourself. Go to HelloFresh.com/Sinners14 and use code Sinners14 for up to 14 free meals, including free shipping. That's HelloFresh.com/Sinners14 and use code Sinners14 for up to 14 free meals, including free shipping. I mean, that's why HelloFresh is America's number one meal kit.
Okay, yeah. So my dad sat me down on my 16th birthday. I was actually very, like, a devout believer, thought that the order was all that, thought that my dad was all that. Like, I was very brainwashed. And so my dad sat me down on my 16th birthday, and he said, it's time to get married. Have you thought about anybody? And I was like, I mean, I'm 16, so no. And he said, I'm going to China for 2 weeks. I'm going to come back, and then I want you to fast and pray about it and to see what God says. And I was like, okay. So I did what he asked. I fast and prayed, and I did not have, like, yeah, I didn't feel like I was supposed to marry anybody. And so he came back and he said, well, I need your list. And I said, I didn't have direction on anybody. I don't feel like I'm supposed to get married right now. And actually, I did talk to him, and I wanted to go to college, and I wanted to have a career instead. And when I mentioned, and I knew I couldn't say that, I knew better to know that there was no way I was going to have a career instead of marriage. But I said, you know, I was kind of like, I want to go to school for a year and then maybe think about marriage in a year. And he said, absolutely not. He said, you're going to be pulled out of college if that's even something that you're thinking about before getting married. And so I tried to avoid it. Like, I avoided it for a while. And then he gave me a choice of two different guys. One of them was Daniel's son, who was my first cousin, who was very abusive. And then the second one was a guy who was 11 years older than me, who was my second cousin. And so I didn't want to, like, I didn't have direction, didn't want to marry either one of them. I was pushed really strongly to marry my first cousin. But, you know, I kept putting it off. Finally, it came to the point where they moved. So I went and I started talking to people on the outside. I started sneaking through a karate class and walking there on Saturdays and just running away. And so they found out about this, and then they immediately moved us from the city we were in. They moved us 30 minutes away to be so that I didn't have any access to anybody on the outside to help me. And so at that point, I had already been thinking about leaving and, like, wanting to get my ducks in a row. And, like, some of my outside friends were like, well, it sounds like you should at least start thinking about it, like, if that's something that you want, then. And I actually had one of my friends help me open a bank account. And so all of a sudden it came to the point, like, my mom was like, hey, we're moving tomorrow. And so they moved us 30 minutes away. And so then I was like, well, so one night it came to the point, so we were staying out in Sandy. They moved us from Bountiful to Sandy. I don't know if you know the locations in Utah, but
I've heard the Bountiful. I mean, how far away is each of these? And then where is, like, the, like, do you guys have, like, somewhat of a compound or your former family?
No, there's no compound. So Bountiful is where the home place is, where the order started. And I actually lived there up until I was 17 years old, just because it was, my mom is descended from the guys who started the order. And then Ortel's family took over everything. So I lived in Bountiful, which is it's a couple of hours away from Idaho, the Idaho border.
Okay.
And then I was moved to Sandy, which is a couple of hours from St. George. So I just moved from north to pretty far south.
Okay. I get it now.
And so, yeah, so about 45 minutes away. And so I didn't have any access to anybody. So one night... So I came to the point where I was leaving. So one night I just climbed out my window, got in my car. I packed enough clothes. I packed probably 3 or 4 pairs of clothes, my picture books, and a toothbrush, and I left.
Wow.
And so
for you.
So I lived in my car for about a month. And then one of my friends from karate was like, well, and he found out what I was doing, because I didn't tell anybody. I knew that anybody that would help me could get in trouble, because I was underage. I was 17 at the time. And so I didn't want anybody to get in trouble for helping me. And I'm not the kind of person that asks for help very easy. Mm-hmm. And so I moved. So I was living in my car. He asked me, he's like, do you want to come rent a room? And so I did end up renting a room. After I moved into my car, I never talked to my mom or my family at all. Like, I completely just disappeared. And because I knew that if I had any contact with them, they would make me come back. And I knew that they had access to everybody, to cops, whatever. And so I literally disappeared. And so I was living with...
Stop you real quick?
Oh, yeah.
Would they not put out, like, okay, when someone's saying, often have people put out missing persons reports, would they not do that with you because they're trying to cover up what's going on in their... Because you're underage.
Right. So they didn't ever call the cops. They didn't ever do any of that. I was missing for about a month and a half before I called my mom when I was living with.
She just didn't try to call you?
Well, I didn't have a phone.
Oh, okay.
Like, we weren't allowed to have cell phones. I got my first cell phone the day after I snuck out.
Oh. Yeah.
So, yeah, so I got my first cell phone. I never called anybody. I disappeared. Because there are some people that you grow up with in the order and you're like, that person's probably going to leave and, like, they're kind of worried about him. I was not one of those people. I went to church. I believed in it. I believed in my dad. Like, I was not somebody that everybody expected to leave.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so I disappeared for a month and a half. And then finally I called my mom and she told me, she said she couldn't believe that I had left. And she told, and when I told her that I didn't want to go back, she told me that I might as well kill myself because I was dead to her and the kids anyways. And so that was my low. Yeah. So mom of the year. So I ended up being gone for about 3 months, and then they told me, so I wasn't able to see my siblings at all after I left, and they told me that I would be completely cut off from them. And so I missed them, and I worried about them, and so I did end up, so I ended up going back after being gone for 3 months, and then they actually didn't even let me move back in with my mom. They made me move back in with one of my sisters, and they were going to try to marry me off too. And they told me that one of the requirements for me coming back was I have to date my first cousin that they wanted me to marry so that I could marry him. Yeah. And that was a requirement for me coming back.
Oh, my gosh.
So I kind of held off for a minute, and then, I came back. I tried to work things out with my parents, see if we could come to a compromise, like see if I could do anything to see my siblings. And when I realized that wasn't going to happen, so it actually came to a point. I was living with my half sister, and her baby had just died. She was 8 months pregnant, and she went into labor, and they refused to let her go to the hospital, and so the baby was born at home and died because of how early she was born.
So they're still doing that recently. I know that was something you did a long time ago. What is the point of that? Just secrecy, that you can't go to the hospital?
Yeah, it was awful. And so it, like, that... And she was a half sister. I loved her, and like she was such a sweetheart. And when that happened, I knew that was not a place that I could stay. And so, I even told her, I was like, you should come with me. Like, this is not, like, you just lost your daughter, and everybody's acting like this was your fault. And so she ended up not leaving, but yeah. So I ended up going and getting high one night after that happened. I was pretty upset. And I came home, and she was like, and she tried to have a conversation with me, and I wasn't taking it serious. And she was like, what is wrong with you? And I was high. So I was like, I think I'm high. And she was like, are you serious? Because I was supposed to cut off like all my outside friends and everything in order to stay with her. And obviously I hadn't, because I got high with them. And so then they gave me an ultimatum. They said, you either have to cut off all friends, close your outside bank account, give everything back to the order, and give them my phone, pretty much put me on lockdown, or I have to go find another place to live. And so I was kind of seeing a boy at the time. And so I called him that night and I said, this is what's going on. Like, and I don't know where to go. Like, and I wasn't 18 yet. Or no. I had just barely turned 18. I think I was either just barely 18 or I had, yeah, I was 18 at the time. I had just barely turned 18. And so I called him and he said, let me call you back. And so I was like, okay, like this is, I'm kind of freaking out here. Like, what do you have to do that's so important? And so he calls me back and he said, my mom said that you can move in with my grandma. And I was like, seriously, like this has to happen like Monday. Cause they talked to me on a Friday and they said, I have to be out by Monday. And so I never told them that I was leaving. They said they would give me till Monday. And I said, okay. And then my sister came home while I was packing and moving out. And we had like a tearful goodbye. Like I gave her a hug and I said, thank you for everything. And I left her key and I left and never went back.
Good for you. Honestly. I mean, that. And also, I don't smoke the weed. It doesn't agree with me. I have. I love wine. That's a passion project of mine. But the weed doesn't. But good for you. Like, go get high in front of them. Like, normal. Like, people have crutches. Just like, you know. And I don't advocate for any substance abuse. I don't do that. But, like, you don't think those fucking scumbags at the top of the chain, like Paul, they have sex addict issues. They have control. Like, it all.
They also smoke weed.
Yeah. Wait, do you think they all smoke weed? Are you serious?
They actually had a pot farm for a while. One of the kids burned it down because they were like, the order teaches that we don't have pot and that the pot is bad. So they burned down the farm.
Yeah, I don't think they were lying too. Like, no one doesn't drink coffee or tea. Like, come on.
Right.
Like, that's never happened. It's been exposed in every cult leader and every, like, no one's
absolutely perfect.
Well, I'm very proud of you for leaving. So, we'll wrap it up in the next 5 minutes with, like, so you left and then you got a job, you wrote a book, which is incredibly impressive. Right? Writing is one of the fucking hardest things to do.
Right.
I love for my podcast, like I could research all day long, but when it comes to actually writing a word, I get severe anxiety.
Yeah. I'm trying to like write kind of like a follow-up, and especially since, so the last 4 months after everything happened, we actually were homeless for the last, since May 3rd. May, June, July, August, September. So we were actually homeless for the last 5 months.
Oh, no, where were you staying?
We were staying wherever. Hotels, like, we went camping, like, I'm not kidding, like, this, it's been a year. So yeah, I, like.
Please call me if you need anything. We got a 70-acre ranch here. There's not great facilities. I shit in the woods a lot, and that's fun.
It was like, so that's the thing that I got to say. So, like, everything went, like, kind of south with my cousin. Obviously, I could have made it work. But it just got to the point where I was like, this is so toxic. It just got to the point where my whole environment was so toxic, and being homeless was a step up from, because I was still so much involved with a lot of people that had left the order that hadn't dealt with their trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And because after you leave, who do you reach out to? The people that you have something in common with, right? And yeah. A lot of people don't like therapy. A lot of people that have left think therapy is stupid. And so I've done 12 years off and on. And so to me, like, I went and I was in this environment and when you leave, you find yourself in, I mean, it's a step up, but like my friends were incredibly disrespectful, like sexual harassment, all that kind of stuff. But I justified it because I said, well, at least they're not raping me because that's what I grew up with. Mm-hmm. And so it just got to the point where everything was so toxic. And I was like, I don't even care. I'm leaving Utah. I had been planning it for a while. So I'm not saying like, it wasn't like an impulsive, okay, we're leaving tomorrow. It was something that I had been planning. I wanted to move out of state. I wanted to do something different. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't, but I had a lot of anxiety about it. I was afraid of it. I had never lived outside of Utah. And mm-hmm. so it was just all of it. Like, I just decided, nope, I'm going to sell all my shit and I'm going to go. And I sold all my shit and I left. And so, and I did have a job. I was working remotely from like hotels and stuff. And so we were staying in hotels, like we weren't, but it did at the end. Then there was a lot of shit that happened with my family that's still in the order. And so, like, after I left, it's like they just like to hold on to you and try to pull you back. And so it was very emotional. It was very hard. And so I ended up losing my job. And so, and I have income now. Like, I'm on unemployment. So I do have, like, we are stable now. We did buy the house. My husband, he did help me buy my house, mm-hmm. but like it's me paying it, but it can't, like, yeah, the way it's like, we're both on the loan. And so we're in a good spot now, but yeah, the last 5 months, like, I felt like I was just clawing to get out of toxic. And honestly, it's been amazing since I've been here. It's only been 2 weeks, but it's just been a huge wave. Yeah, I know. It's funny. Like, when you like messaged me, I was like, this is kind of the perfect time. Like, wow.
Yeah. That's so cool. So, like, I honestly think, like, and I'm not trying to give you advice or a pump up, but I'm just going to tell you what I believe. I think you seem incredibly smart, and the fact that, like, you're one of the only ones that goes and gets therapy and, like, deals with the shit that, I mean, shitty things happen to a lot of people. I not to trauma compare, but I do think that your family has been dealt a heavier blow than a lot of people. And
yeah.
I think the fact that you deal with it in the proper way, and I think you could just do fucking anything. Honestly, like, I being like homeless or you know, whatever you dealt with is just like a precursor to like a launching pad. Like, I really do think that.
Thank you. Yeah, that means a lot. Like, it's been, so I've known for a while. I've known for a while that I've put up with a lot of things that I shouldn't have. And a lot of that has been just my journey through going through therapy, learning what healthy boundaries are, because that's the biggest thing that you leave the order without is boundaries. And you allow people to disrespect you. You allow people to take advantage of you and to do things. And it really, like, my husband has really helped, like, save me from a lot of that. But I mean, he can't protect me forever, right? Like, it has to be me standing on my own two feet. And
yeah. It has to be within you. And I think be kind to yourself. Like, it's going to take a shitload of time, but I think you've done pretty dang well. I mean, but it takes time. And I think that things will come up for sure that you're not expecting, but I'm very impressed by you. And I'd love to stay in touch. And if you need help in any way, like if you're ever struggling or even just want, like if you write your next book, I'll do anything to promote it. And I like you.
Thank you. Thanks. I like you too. Yeah, I was actually thinking about writing about the last year and, like, doing the homeless thing. And I don't know if I've processed it enough to start writing about it yet, but...